The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management. It's time to bring out the Better Worldian in all of us. Welcome to Better Worldians Radio with your hosts, Ray, Mary Sue, and Gregory Hansel. Better Worldians Radio inspires you with the people and ideas that are making the world a better place. You'll hear how small acts can make a big difference every day. Now, here are Ray, Mary Sue, and Gregory.
Hi, this is Ray Hansel. Welcome to Better Worldians Radio. Better Worldians Radio is a weekly broadcast whose mission is to uplift and inspire you to make the world a better place. Every week, we are speaking with best-selling authors, film producers, TED speakers, happiness experts, and also everyday folks just like you whose small acts are making a big difference. That's why we call them Better Worldians. And speaking of Better Worldians, let me first introduce you to my co-hosts, Mary Sue Hansel and Gregory Hansel. Mary Sue has been a successful entrepreneur and business executive for over 30 years. She's also an avid practitioner of the healing arts, positive psychology, and spirituality. And now, here's my life partner, Mary Sue.
Hi, everyone. It's great to be here with you today to share all the good that's being done in the world. Now, let me also introduce Gregory Hansel. Greg has a background in philosophy and world religions, and most importantly, has spent over 15 years at the intersection of technology, social causes, and big ideas.
Hi, this is Greg. I'm so glad you can all join us here on Better Worldians Radio. Let me first just tell you a bit about my dad, Ray, who you just heard from. He's a serial entrepreneur who successfully founded and with Marriott, who took public a national marketing firm. Giving back has always been really important to Dad, who supports many causes, especially disadvantaged children and their families. By the way, we're the family team that created the popular social game on Facebook called A Better World. It rewards players for doing good deeds while helping to raise money and awareness for charities. To date, over 25 million good deeds have been done in A Better World by more than 2.7 million people. And in the month of March, we're supporting Cancer Schmancer, Fran Drescher's nonprofit that promotes the prevention and early detection of cancer. When our players complete 300,000 good deeds in the game this month, we'll release funds to provide 25 women in need with free cancer screening.
This week on Better Worldians Radio, we're talking with actress and activist Fran Drescher. Fran received 2 Emmy and 2 Golden Globe nominations for her portrayal as the lovable Miss Fine on CBS's hit series The Nanny, which she both created and executive produced. An accomplished author, Fran received the prestigious NCCS Writers Award for Cancer Schmancer, which along with Enter Whining were both New York Times bestsellers. A 14-year uterine cancer survivor, Fran turns lemons into lemonade and pain into purpose through her leadership as a cancer advocate. Her mission is to shift America's focus towards proactive health care and healthy, toxin-free living. She believes that the best cure for cancer is not getting it in the first place. As founder, president, and visionary of the nonprofit Cancer Schmancer Movement, she focuses on 3 prongs to fight the disease: early detection, prevention, and advocacy. Fran, thanks so much for joining us today on Better Worldians Radio.
My pleasure. I really like what you guys are doing.
Oh, you're very, very welcome. I'd like to begin for our listeners to have you tell us a little bit about your experiences in starring and producing the show The Nanny.
Oh, well, you know, I had done many, many, many television pilots, a short-lived sitcom, and several movies under my belt before The Nanny happened. But I had already made a commitment to myself that if I didn't get on the inside as a producer, someone that had more control over my own fate within the industry, I was going to find another way to be successful and happy, because I felt like I had done one too many projects where I thought I knew how to do it better than the people I was employed by. And it became frustrating, and of course the pilots didn't get picked up, and so, you know, it was very serendipitous. On a plane to France, I was on the same flight with the president of CBS, a network that I had worked for repeatedly as an actress, and I started talking to him, and one thing led to another, and 9.5 hours later, I had convinced him that to let me pitch some ideas, and which he agreed to when we all returned to the States. And it was on that trip that I actually came up with the television show The Nanny, because I was spending time with my dear friend Twiggy, the one and only, and her daughter, a proper little British schoolgirl, around 11 or 12 years old. And I was taking her around the city because I wasn't confident enough to scale a new city by myself, which was London. And and my friend Twiggy was working. So I took Carly with me, and then she started to say that her new shoes were hurting her. And I thought, oh, God, I hope she doesn't think I'm going to take her home now. So I said, honey, just step on the backs of them. And she said, won't that break them? And I said, break them in. And I couldn't get this relationship out of my head. And like 5 a.m. London time, I called my husband, Peter, who was back in L.A., and I knew it was much earlier there. And I said, I think I came up with the show that we should pitch to Jeff Sagansky when I come back. And I said, what do you think of a spin on The Sound of Music? Only instead of Julie Andrews, I come to the door. And Peter, who's got a great, you know, sense for these things, said almost immediately, that's it. That's the one that we're going to pitch to CBS. When you get back, we'll develop it. And that was the beginning of it. As soon as we went in there, they kind of green-lighted it to take the next step and the next step. We kept jumping those hurdles. And we knew when we finally got to shoot the pilot that we had caught lightning in a bottle. The audience was right with us. They got the humor. They got the... you know, what the setup was, what the situation was. And it was just a very, very special time that continues to air worldwide to this day from 1993. And we feel, you know, very blessed. And so, you know, it's been a wonderful door opener for me on many different levels. And, you know, I'm most appreciative.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I have to mention this quote from the book. Towards the tail end of it, you actually say at the end of this chapter on pins and needles, you never know when a pearl will drop in your lap, so stay open and you too may get a note from through a friend from someone you don't know, one that will make all the difference. And so this serendipity started way back then, even for the with the nanny, even before the... some of the serendipitous things that happened in your journey with cancer schmancer.
You know, opportunity knocks all the time, every day. But if we're always looking in one direction and we don't, you know, and we have blinders on our eyes, we may not see. And you have to be flexible and anticipate that something you didn't anticipate is going to, may actually be the portal for you to walk through for the next chapter in your life. And that's what I think makes life particularly exciting, because, you know, we plan our play, we play our plan, but you never know what's going to come out of left field, and you should always be open to it and be willing to move in that direction, you know? I mean, the tree that can bend, doesn't break.
So let's talk with our listeners for a bit about the one of the major subjects here we're going to be covering with you, and that's the months and months of knowing that something was wrong before you received this diagnosis in 2000. What was it like when you finally found out about the diagnosis with uterine cancer?
Well, you know, this is after a two-year, eight-doctor honesty, so I just couldn't believe that ultimately they told me I had cancer, and it took them so long, and I had no idea at that point how long I'd been sitting with cancer and whether this meant that, you know, my life was in real danger. So it leveled me to the ground, and I wept, and I was very frightened, and I looked around at the things in my house, and I thought, God, you know, I'm going to be lifted out of this equation, and all this stuff is still going to be around, and the only thing that will be gone is me. And I wish that I could have been anybody but me in that moment, but I was stuck with being me. And I had to face, you know, what I didn't want to, but I had no choice. I had to just persevere and walk through the fire and hope to get to the other side.
Mm-hmm. You had a great support system of friends and family during this time. So how important was all that for you?
It's vitally important. I tell all people that suspect that if they have something wrong with them, to, you know, build yourself a posse of people that are going to go with you to the doctor, ask questions, write down answers, be the strong one, not make it about them, not be someone you have to calm down, but someone that's going to carry you if you need it. And if there was one piece of advice, it would be that. Handpick those people that are going to be strong for you. And because it's a very tough time, very, very challenging. And, doctors, they rattle off words that you've never heard before. And you got to have somebody with a pen and pad. That head isn't going to start swirling. And to write down and ask the doctor, how do you spell that? Because you're going to want them to help you look all this stuff up on the internet and see what is going on out there in this area. And, you just absolutely can't and should not try to do it alone. Mm-hmm. There's too much, and it's too important, quite frankly.
And you learned a lot in your process. I really encourage our listeners to read this book because it's really a journey of discovery that Fran experienced through just constantly staying with it, asking questions, using that support group. And I have to ask you about your sense of humor here. Did that help you also get through the tough, difficult times as well?
Oh, definitely. I mean, it always does. Comedy, humor, laughter, it lifts your spirit and helps lighten the load. But living life joyfully is a daily practice. And it's very easy to get swallowed up by grief. Mm-hmm. And you really have to be mindful of that. Mm-hmm. When I was writing my book, which became the New York Times bestseller, Cancer Schmancer, the first draft was actually pretty bitter. I was angry at the medical community. I was angry at my own body. And I felt betrayed. Mm-hmm. And I had to keep writing it differently until I found my funny voice again. Mm-hmm. And then it became a very cathartic experience because I remembered things that were actually very funny that mm-hmm. happened. And I think that one of the life lessons – that came out of that was that side by side with grief lies joy. And sometimes it's hard to feel it or see it. You got to seek it out and be very aware and trusting that it's there, and not to make your grief or your illness or your loss the whole pie of your life, because you'll be doing yourself a great disservice. And it frankly isn't the whole pie. It can be tragic, but don't make it the whole pie. There's a lot going on, and as long as you're alive, life is for the living. So you have to live, yeah. And you have to look for the tiny miracles that are growing through the cracks of the pavement.
So what ultimately inspired you to write this this book, this amazing book, Cancer Schmancer? What was it that drove you to do that?
Well, originally it was because I didn't want what happened to me to happen to other people. And then when I went on my book tour and I started public speaking, I realized that what happened to me happens to many Americans by means of misdiagnosis and mistreatment. And for many, though fortunately not myself, late-stage cancer diagnosis is a consequence. So I was really quite taken aback that my story was not unique, but actually quite common. Mm-hmm. And it was then that I realized that the book was not the end, but just the beginning of what is now a life mission. And that the next logical conclusion was to start a movement so that we can empower Americans to take control of their bodies, to transform from being a patient into a medical consumer, to know what the early warning whispers are of the cancers that may affect you, and know the tests that are available, because all too often they're not even on the menu at the doctor's office. And all of these things have become part of the mission statement and code of the Cancer Schmancer movement.
Well, it's an amazing movement. We're going to get into the details of some of that movement in our next segment, but we're going to take a short break right now. We'll be talking more with Fran Drescher about her foundation, her book, Cancer Schmancer, when we come back. We'll be right back.
The Internet's number one talk station.
Number one talk station.
VoiceAmerica.com.
She didn't just visit the sick and poor. She moved in with them. It wasn't convenient and it wasn't pretty, but they needed help. 12 more then joined this saint of the gutters. They were soon followed by over 4,000 other nuns who gave healing care in orphanages, AIDS hospices, and charity centers. Mother Teresa couldn't do it all, but she gave her all. Compassion. Pass it on. From the Foundation for a Better Life at values.com.
I've always wanted a neighbor
just like you.
I've always wanted to live
in a neighborhood with you.
So let's make the most of this beautiful day.
Since we're together, we might as well say,
would you be mine?
Could you be mine?
Won't you be my neighbor?
My neighbor?
Mr. Rogers passed along friendship in his neighborhood, hoping we would do the same. So let's get started. Friendship. Pass it on. From the Foundation for a Better Life at values.com.
How can we make it a better world?
I think we can make it a better world if we had peace among each other.
Everybody needs to help their neighbor, and then it will spread from then on.
I should do more.
I could do more. I spend so much time on Facebook.
How much time do I spend on Facebook?
Probably more than I should be spending.
I would definitely get back if I could find the time.
Now you can help others just by playing a game on Facebook. It's called A Better World. Share your hopes and dreams. Do good deeds. Make a difference. And have fun. Become a better worldian. Join a community where all good deeds get rewarded. Log in today to find out how you can make a difference every day.
For more information, visit facebook.com/abetterworld.
In 1987, some inner-city first graders were promised a college education. Now, this promise didn't come from a wealthy corporation. It came from Oral Lee Brown, who saved a large portion of her modest income every year for these children.
She told Ms. Brown, you can't do everything. I said, no, but we need to do more.
And she did more by sending 19 kids to college, helping others. Pass it on. From the Foundation for a Better Life at values.com.
Become our friend on Facebook. Post your thoughts about our shows and network on our timeline. Visit facebook.com/Voice America.
This is Better Worldians Radio with a family team of Ray, Mary Sue, and Gregory Hansel. To connect with the show today, please call us at 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. You may also send us an email to radio@betterworldians.com. Now, back to Better Worldians Radio.
You're listening to Better Worldians Radio. We're speaking with actress and activist Fran Drescher. And now, let me welcome back Fran and Mary Sue.
Hi, Fran.
Hi, Mary Sue. How are you feeling?
Great, great.
Good.
You know, I wanted to ask you a little bit more about that book tour because apparently it inspired you to found the Cancer Smancer Institute. Could you tell us more about what happened? Were there women talking to you? Did they email you? Did they, you know, call you? What were you finding?
Oh, well, after first on the book tour, you're meeting people one-to-one. They come up to the desk where you're signing books, and
right.
They want to share their story. And when I went on the lecture circuit, we would do Q&As after, or they would rush the stage after I finished speaking, and they'd want to say, this happened to me, or, you know, my doctor treated me for that, and, you know, it was just repeatedly, in stunning numbers, quite evident to me that the way most doctors diagnose is inadequate. And they all seem to be bludgeoned by health insurance companies that pressure them to go the least expensive route of diagnostic testing. And so they tend to subscribe to the philosophy, if you hear hooves galloping, don't look for zebra, it's probably a horse. So for all intents and purposes, I looked like, considering my age and weight, that I was most likely more in the perimenopause world than uterine cancer, which typically is a cancer that women who are either obese or postmenopausal experience. But one out of four women are young and thin, as I was. And doctor number one thought I was too young to get an endometrial biopsy. And that was the very test, 2 years and eight doctors later, that diagnosed me. So, you know, over and over again, I'm hearing people share their stories, which are akin to my own. And they would say, I like what you have to say, and I like where you're going with this, and I want to help you, or how can I learn more? And it just became very evident to me that I needed to start a movement. And all these people needed somebody to help lead them into a direction where they were more empowered and more in control of their health. So, you know, that's how the Cancer Schmitz movement came about. It was out of necessity because there were so many people that seemed so lost and clearly were looking for leadership. And I felt like, you know, I got famous, I got cancer, and I lived to talk about it. So I started talking, and, you know, 14 and a half years later, I've not stopped.
Well, God bless you. I'm sure a lot of women have found what they needed by reading your book and also looking at your website, Cancer Schmancer. Let's talk about that a little bit more. Early detection is such an important part of the work that Cancer Schmancer does. One of the things that I saw on the website was about Franz Van. Can you tell us what that is?
Well, that's a van that's, you know, rolls into low-income neighborhoods like an ice cream truck.
Oh.
And has mobile mammography equipment on the van. And some vans, you're invited in to get a mammogram. Other vans, the mobile mammography machine goes to a local clinic. But either way, it's designed to help women who are marginalized and do not get breast exams regularly to offer them an opportunity to do that, because most low-income women will find out they have cancer in the late stages, and most of them will die. So,
well, it sounds like Advanced has saved many lives, you know, with that early detection.
Yes, and when we, you know, something is reported that seems off or suspicious, we offer them what we call a patient navigator, and that's somebody that is going to be that person to help navigate you through the medical maze when you think that there's something seriously wrong with you.
You know, I really like the list of questions that you had on the website that patients should ask the doctors. You know, we really don't know what questions to ask, most of us, like you're saying you didn't when you went. So that's really helpful.
Yes.
Yeah, can you talk a little bit more about maybe what some of them are and how you design them?
Okay, well, you know, it's all from my own experience. When we did our first video for Cancer Schmancer at the Tea Party, we had a lot of women sitting around my living room, which we shot and on video, and some of them were survivors. Some of them had never personally experienced cancer, but had been exposed to it through a relative or a friend. And some were just primarily interested in learning how they can either avoid getting cancer or what they needed to do to prevent themselves from, you know, getting cancer. And we always lean towards the side that the reason why we lose loved ones to cancer is almost always due to late stage diagnosis. So if you catch it on arrival, 95% survival.
Oh, that's perfect. That's a great expression.
And so that's what we need to condition our members and their families to start thinking about, because particularly with women, where they're very consumed with taking care of their families, feeding the kids, cleaning the house,
right,
and if they're a working mom, that's just compounded by having a full or part-time job. because at the end of the day, the woman is still the caregiver of the husband, of the spouse, the children, and the elder in almost every home worldwide. So
I guess you're saying that we women really don't take care of ourselves because we're too busy taking care of everybody else.
That is the concern and pitfall. And so we tend to ignore the early warning whispers of the cancers that might affect us. And so that's something that we try and train women to move away from, because the best gift you can give your family is your own survival of a long and healthy life.
Absolutely.
So you can sweep those early warning whisper symptoms under the rug and act like if you ignore it, maybe it'll just go away.
Right.
But the day will come when you can ignore it no more, and you will only wish that you could still kind of be in that place where you had options. But
just the fact that you're saying this on this broadcast, I'm sure a lot of women will take some action and go get that breast exam that they haven't gotten and so forth. You know, you also have a big focus on prevention, and you talk a lot about the environmental factors, which is also, you know, a big interest of mine. Tell me about the whole Detox Your Home initiative.
Detox Your Home, we think, is really breakthrough and fills a space that desperately needs to be discussed, because what we are coming out of the 20th century with is this idea that if we write enough checks, there will be a cure for this disease, and we'll just have to take a pill or something, and everything will be just swell. But that is not likely to happen. Over 90% of cancers are environmentally stimulated.
That was such a surprise to me. I didn't realize it was that high, that 90% were from environmental factors.
Over 90%. So, you know, I mean, the stuff that we bring into the home creates a toxic chemical cocktail that rivals living across the street from an oil refinery.
Oh, jeez.
We have to start asking ourselves, what do we put in our mouths, on our skin, and around us by means of cleaning and gardening supplies? So we can detox our home. If we start detoxing our home, we will effectively reduce our risk of getting cancer for both ourselves and our families. And this is what we must strive for, because the best cure for cancer is not getting it in the first place. But the way the medical world works today is called reductionist medicine. And it was established directly out of war and the battlefield, when a very badly wounded soldier would come into the hospital and they'd have to patch him up in the best way they can so that the symptom of war doesn't stop them from getting back out there in the field to fight in war. So there's a lot of things that are really not in our best interest, but they're repurposed out of what we use in war. And I'm actually trying to wake people up and have them realize that, you know, the great things in life do not come out of war. Innovation does not come out of war. It's just all repurposed stuff that isn't necessarily good for us. Chemicals, aluminum cans, pesticides, herbicides. There's just so much, and it's so inundating.
It's scary, isn't it?
You know? Well, it's scary if you don't know what to do. If you go online and you start practicing being a medical consumer and you learn how to start detoxing your home with our In, On, and Around You challenge, once you start doing that, then you take the next step, and it happens quite naturally. You begin to look at, you know, what is that mattress you're sitting on? What is that, you know, fabric on your couch that has flame retardant on it? What is that, you know, no iron shirt my husband is wearing? Why doesn't that 100% cotton grease? What is it doused with? And how many years does it continue to off-gas?
You know, when I was reading your website, I was looking about the beauty care products and the eyeshadows and things, and I thought, let me look at mine. I thought, uh-oh. So I wanted to thank you very much. I just threw out all those old eye care products and got organic ones.
That's great.
So maybe you could tell our listeners, a lot of people don't think about, you know, their foundations, their eye, that these things actually have all these horrible chemicals.
Yeah, and some are even worse than others, like lipstick. We end up eating, over the course of a year, like a pound of lipstick.
Oish.
We eat it. And also the lips are one of the most absorbing parts of the whole body. So what you're constantly putting on is actually sinking into your body. I am, you know, really very opposed to using antiperspirant. Mm. Antiperspirant has aluminum chlorhydrate in it.
Yes.
And that is very bad for us, and we should avoid it at all costs. I had a boyfriend who said, but I sweat. And it's like, well, go to the men's room twice a day and wash your pits. Because you can't be putting that stuff under your arms. That's a part of your body that needs to help you to detox through perspiration. And you're unnaturally trying to control it by making it prohibitive to release the toxins that are in our body. And that should just be outlawed. But it's all about supply and demand.
Thank you so much for this good advice.
Yeah, I hate to take another break at the time that we're talking about the pits. But we're going to have to take another short break, and I can't wait. We'll be back shortly with Fran Drescher in just a few minutes.
Thanks, Fran.
Thank you.
Streaming live, the leader in internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
In 1987, some inner-city first graders were promised a college education. Now, this promise didn't come from a wealthy corporation. It came from Oral Lee Brown, who saved a large portion of her modest income every year for these children.
She told Ms. Brown, you can't do everything I said, no, but we need to do more.
And she did more by sending 19 kids to college, helping others pass it on. From the Foundation for a Better Life at values.com.
How can we make it a better world?
I think we can make it a better world if we had peace among each other.
Everybody needs to help their neighbor, and then it will spread from there on.
I should do more.
I could do more. I spend so much time on Facebook.
How much time do I spend on Facebook?
Probably more than I should be spending.
I would definitely get back if I could find the time.
Now you can help others just by playing a game on Facebook. It's called A Better World. Share your hopes and dreams. Do good deeds. Make a difference. And have fun. Become a Better Worldian. Join a community where all good deeds get rewarded. Log in today to find out how you can make a difference every day.
For more information, visit facebook.com/abetterworld.
I've always wanted a neighbor just like you. I've always wanted to live
in a neighborhood with you.
So let's make the most of this beautiful day.
Since we're together, we might as well say,
would you be mine?
Could you be mine?
Won't you be my neighbor?
My neighbor?
Mr. Rogers passed along friendship in his neighborhood, hoping we would do the same. So let's get started. Friendship. Pass it on from the Foundation for a Better Life at values.com. She didn't just visit the sick and poor. She moved in with them. It wasn't convenient, and it wasn't pretty, but they needed help. 12 more then joined this saint in the gutters. They were soon followed by over 4,000 other nuns who gave healing care in orphanages, AIDS hospices, and charity centers. Mother Teresa couldn't do it all, but she gave her all. Compassion. Pass it on from the Foundation for a Better Life at values.com.
We're making it easier to listen to the Voice America Talk Radio Network live wherever you go on iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android. Download it from the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
This is Better Worldians Radio with a family team of Ray, Mary Sue, and Gregory Hansel. To connect with the show today, please call us at 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. You may also send us an email to radio@betterworldians.com. Now, back to Better Worldians Radio.
We're back now with actress and activist Fran Drescher.
Hi, Fran. This is Greg.
Hi, Greg. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks. You enjoying the show so far?
Yes, very nice. I'm really intrigued by this little family radio show.
Thank you so much.
I mean, it's really sweet.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, you know, I know that you've had a huge following of young fans since The Nanny stayed on the air for more than 20 years. So what would you want to tell your young fans about living healthier and preventative lifestyles?
Well, it's interesting that you ask that because we are now in the process of producing a very viewer-friendly school assembly program that will inspire and motivate kids to learn how to detox their home and engage their parents and teach them how to detox their homes as well. So it's exciting because I think that the younger you are, the more you're open to the idea that you're inheriting a planet with a lot of problems that you yourself didn't create. But you're going to have to stop this, you know, rabbit hole from getting dug even deeper. And the start of that is learning how to look at everything in your home differently. And what are you eating? Kids can eat a lot of things that are not healthy. And as a result of that, kids for the first time in U.S. history are predicted to not live as long as their parents.
It's crazy.
Now, you know, kids are getting sick with diseases like diabetes that historically were a kind of diabetes that would only attack older people. Mm-hmm. But because kids are so sedentary, sitting in front of the computer or playing video games, and because they're eating without thinking, a vast array of GMO foods, they're getting fat and sick. And I
think that the jig is up on this, because they will not live as long as their parents if they don't make the commitment now to change what they eat, what they put on their skin, and what they clean and garden with.
Yeah,
and
I
they
think
need to also ask their schools, because a lot of kids that have trouble paying attention or get allergies or very tired or they can't sit still, this could all be the effect of an allergic response to the chemicals that they're using on the desks and the floors each night. Because in that lies a lot of, things that are harmful. And you just have to insist that the things that are being used to clean the rooms that you're spending 8 hours a day in is made of something, a material that's either 100% natural or 100% hypoallergenic.
Yeah. No, I think it's a good point. I think kids are scared about what they're inheriting, and I think it's great that you're out there trying to encourage, the younger generations to really be aware of what's happening and be mindful of what the changes they can make, to improve their lives and everyone's life. I did want to ask you also, what did your battle with cancer teach you about yourself?
That I'm not a superwoman, that I shouldn't try and take on everybody else's problems to a fault, that I should be able to be a more well-rounded person by means of not only giving help, but asking for help. And I think that to be more compassionate, to be deepened as an actor, to be more feeling for other people's strifes. And I think that's kind of the wheelhouse that most of my life lessons factor into.
That's interesting. Some of those are real gifts. So I was wondering, how has founding and being a part of Cancer Schmancer changed your life?
It somehow made sense out of the senseless when you turn pain into purpose, because I had to get a radical hysterectomy to cure myself of the cancer, which is a difficult operation for any woman, but for one that had never had children like myself, it's a particularly bitter pill to swallow. And I felt very frustrated and very angry about it all. But the organization that I founded has given a meaning and a context to it all that makes me feel like, I'm not glad I had cancer. I don't wish it on anyone, but I am better for it. And sometimes the best gifts come in the ugliest packages.
Mm-hmm. It's true. So what's your best piece of advice for someone who is dealing with the cancer diagnosis?
I think that it's good to look at that list of things you should do. It's good to create a support system. It's good to not try and go it alone, and to see this as a challenging opportunity to become a more refined version of yourself. And if you focus on that and you focus on being joyful and grateful that you're here and you're alive, and see yourself in the big picture of how you can turn this around. You didn't ask for it to happen. You were busy making other plans, But no one has a crystal ball. No one knows what's going to happen 5 minutes from now. And when, you know, life hands you a blow, and it certainly does when you're told you have cancer, you need to pull yourself up, pick yourself, dust yourself off, and really develop yourself in a way that strengthens you, that allows you to see what you're afraid of, to say things that you maybe didn't feel need to be said but should be said, to live in the moment, to be more zen, to know that whatever happens through this experience, you've seen how you can grow as a human being as a result of this, and truly turn it into an opportunity.
So I have a question I asked every guest at the end of every show. We only have about 2 minutes left, unfortunately, but I did want to ask you this week, how do you hope the work being done at Cancer Schmancer can help to make the world a better place?
Well, I think that right now we're a society that is living in fear and wondering when someone you know or even yourself is going to be told you have cancer. And what Cancer Schmancer does is empower you with knowledge. Knowledge is empowering. And so the more you know, the more you can take strategic steps to prevent cancer and also to get it diagnosed while it's still in the whisper stage. The reason why we lose loved ones to cancer is almost always due to late-stage diagnosis. So these are the things that I think are of critical importance and something that sort of can make a difference. I wrote the book. I think writing down your feelings, even if you never get your book published, that doesn't matter. It's that you wrote it and you got out a lot of feelings and other things that help define who you are in your work, in your family, in your community.
Well, we're very grateful that you did write that book, and we encourage people to read it. It's quite an inspirational story. You can find out more about Fran, her foundation, and the book by going to cancerschmancer.org. Fran, on behalf of everybody here at Better Worldians, I'd like to thank you for joining us today on Better Worldians Radio.
Thank you so much for having me and for all the good, positive work you're putting out to the world. I really appreciate you guys very much.
We'd like to thank you today, especially. This has been a very, very special episode for us. As we end our show each week, I'd like to share our mission here at Better Worldians. What we're all about, we strive to make the world a better place by encouraging the very best in everyone. We focus on positive thinking, positive values, and positive actions. In a nutshell, in short, our vision here is to bring out the better world in everyone so that we can all make it a better world. So until next time, everyone out there, please be a better worldian.
Thank you again for helping make the world just a little bit better this week. Please join your hosts, Ray, Mary Sue, and Gregory Hansel next Thursday at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, 8 a.m. Pacific, on the Voice America Variety Channel. We hope we've inspired you to do one small thing to help make a big difference. Join us at BetterWorldians.com to tell us what you've done to change the world. Plenty of games teach kids reading, writing, and arithmetic, and that's great. But what about a game that teaches kindness, helpfulness, and ways to do good?
The family team behind A Better World is launching a crowdfunding campaign on Indiegogo to create a kid-friendly mobile game called A Better World for Kids. The game encourages values long associated with the holiday season, like gratitude and giving, as well as concerns that kids face today, like anti-bullying, recycling, and healthy eating. A Better World for Kids encourages children to break the boundary between the real world and virtual world. They aren't just playing a game. They're going out in the world and doing good. Go to abetterworld.com/kidsgame to learn how kids can decorate a house, dress up in fun clothes, adopt virtual pets, and get a job, just like mom and dad. Please support our efforts to make a better world for kids at abetterworld.com/kidsgame.
How can we make it a better world?
I think we can make it a better world if we had peace among each other.
Everybody needs to help their neighbor, and then it will spread from then on.
I should do more.
I could do more. I spend so much time on Facebook.
How much time do I spend on Facebook?
Probably more than I should be spending.
I would definitely get back if I could find the time.
Now you can help others just by playing a game on Facebook. It's called A Better World. Share your hopes and dreams. Do good deeds. Make a difference. And have fun. Become a better worldian. Join a community where all good deeds get rewarded. Log in today to find out how you can make a difference every day.
For more information, visit facebook.com/abetterworld.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program, brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.